WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Wednesday, that's right, it is hump day, folks, November 2nd, 2016. We've got a fantastic hour of sports talk in store for all of our listeners out there. On today's Current Sports, we will talk about the two greatest words in the sports dictionary. Yeah, folks, Game 7. I can't wait. I know you can't either. The Cubbies have come all the way down from a 3-1 Fall Classic deficit to now even up things. And the culmination will take place in Cleveland, folks. We will give you a preview of tonight's World Series Game 7 and recap how exactly we got here. Also, as we mentioned on yesterday's Current Sports, the first batch of college football playoff rankings from the CFP committee were released via ESPN last night at 7 p.m. We'll give you a brief rundown of what the committee is thinking as of right now, at least. Again, we have three more rankings to be released until the final, of course, on December 4th. So we'll recap what took place there. Also, we will invite Detroit Pistons beat reporter for the Free Press, Mr. Vince Ellis, to the show. Vince will talk about the Pistons' hot start to the year. The Pistons have now begun the year 3-1 for back-to-back seasons. How impressive is that? Now, again, still early. We still have 70-plus games left to play. But there are some things to be encouraged about if you are a Detroit Pistons fan. And on the back end of the show, we will give you a preview of tonight's MSU men's basketball game, the final exhibition matchup against Saginaw Valley. All of that and more. If you want to weigh in, all you got to do is pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. From 3-1 to 3-3, that's right, the two best words in sports, Game 7. The Chicago Cubs and Cleveland Indians will play in a winner-takes-all showdown for the World Series tonight after the Cubs' 9-3 Game 6 dub. Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, both homered, but it was the third innings Anderson Russell grand slam that broke the game wide open. Check this out, folks.
High fly ball in the air to left. Cubs strike first. Tape measure shot by Chris Bryant. 2-0. High fly ball to left center. At the wall. Grand slam. 7-0 Chicago. Rizzo into right field. This ball is out of here. 9-2.
Yes, huge moments. Oh, boy. Tonight's Indians ace, Corey Kluber, will take the hill while Cubs will match with Kyle Hendricks in the most anticipated baseball game in recent memory from Progressive Field. First pitch at 8 p.m., folks. We'll give you a preview of that matchup in just a second. The Pistons recorded their third straight victory at home last night with a 102-89 win over the New York Knicks after dropping their season opener to the Toronto Raptors. The Pistons have won the last three games by double digits. Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris led the night, racking up 25 and 22 points respectively.
Back and forth action here. Marcus Morris is open. He hits it.
And despite missing the injured Reggie Jackson, the Pistons shot 55% from the field in the first half. The Pistons are on the road tonight against the Brooklyn Nets. Tip-off is set for 7:30 p.m. The Red Wings are in the city of brotherly love tonight, looking to end a two-game skid and get back to their winning ways against the Philadelphia Flyers when the puck drops at 8. The Flyers have won 11 straight home games against the Wings dating back to 1997 and have outscored Detroit 20-7 in their last four meetings. Now, power plays will be key in the matchup, as last season the teams combined for 0-25 with the man advantage. But this season, the Flyers are high scoring and currently hold the NHL's third ranked power play. Detroit will likely look to win a lower scoring affair without leading scorer Thomas Vinek, who is out tonight with a lower body injury. Lions DN Armonte Bryant will face his second suspension of the 2016 year. Bryant has been suspended 3 games for violating the league's policy on substance abuse. The Lions released a statement saying, quote, "When we signed Armonte, we knew additional discipline from the NFL was a possibility due to an incident that occurred in 2015. Since joining our team, Armonte has met our expectations on and off the field," end quote. The Lions claim Bryant off of waivers in October after he was released by the Browns. He will not be able to return until week 13 when the Lions take on the New Orleans Saints. Let the controversy begin, folks. The first college football playoff rankings were released by the committee last night, and the top of the rankings is Alabama. No surprise there, followed by Clemson, Michigan. But a surprise team, Texas A&M. Yeah, with the one-loss Aggies edging out undefeated Washington, who sits at number 5. The Big Ten well-represented high in the poll with Ohio State at number 6, Wisconsin at 8, Nebraska at 10, and Penn State at 12. We'll have more on that in just a second. Western Michigan, folks, row the boat. That's right, WMU stayed undefeated on the year, taking down Ball State in a weird Tuesday night game, 52-20 last night. Wide receiver Corey Davis starred in the game, catching 12 passes for 272 yards and 3 TDs.
Terrell pumps once. Davis gets open. He gets inside Ball State territory. 25. Oh, he makes a great move. That's unbelievable. That's Corey Davis. That's his third touchdown of the night.
The number 17 AP-ranked team in the country is now 9-0 on the year. In the first college football playoff poll, the Broncos were placed at number 23 and will look to climb in the polls again next week when they take on Kent State. PJ Fleck, keep rowing the boat, man. It's just fantastic to see what WMU is doing right now. All right, on Tuesday, Central Michigan QB and Lansing Catholic graduate Cooper Rush was named one of 12 finalists for the William V. Campbell Trophy. Now, the trophy, which goes to the nation's top football scholar athlete, is considered to be the academic Heisman. Rush is in his fourth year as CMU's starting QB and graduated last May with, get this, a 3.86 grade point average as an actuarial science major and is pursuing his MBA. Now, Rush is one of the most decorated quarterbacks in Chippewa history and ranks 10th nationally with 2,533 passing yards and has also thrown for 21 scores. And last but certainly not least, the number 12-ranked Michigan State men's basketball team closes out its preseason tonight at the Brez against Saginaw Valley State. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. there. The Spartans are ranked number 12 in the Associated Press preseason poll, number 9 in the USA Today preseason coaches poll. They will start their regular season next Friday against number 10 Arizona in the Armed Forces Classic in Honolulu, Hawaii. MSU starts out with arguably the toughest schedule in college basketball history with games against number 1 Duke, number 2 Kentucky, and a potential matchup against number 13 Louisville. MSU could face 4 top 15 squads in November alone. Izzo actually called it the toughest November arguably in program history. Now, if any teams are prepared, it's a team coached by Hall of Famer Tom Izzo. So this team will be ready, folks. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin. WKAR. Without further ado, let's start the show.
We'll be right back. Love is a drug and I love the way it makes me feel.
It makes me feel.
No gasoline, we eat it, 'tis my natural feel.
Natural feel.
It gets deep inside and I find myself doing strange things.
Doing strange things.
And I start speaking in tongues, I don't know what it all means.
What it all means.
And it gets inside of my brain. And it makes me go so insane. And I start saying crazy things.
2-0. High fly ball to left center. At the wall. Grand slam. 7-0 Chicago. Addison Russell came into this game over his last eight, hitting over 300. Two huge home runs in the NLCS out in Los Angeles. And now a crushing grand slam here in the third inning to open it up. Rizzo into right field. This ball is out of here. 9-2. The lead is back to 7 here in the ninth inning. And we'll see if that changes the strategy in the bottom of this frame.
The stage is set for an incredible game 7, but who has the edge going into it?
Flash, you know, there's a saying in baseball, you know, momentum is only good as your next starting pitcher. And you know, you would think the Cubs have all the momentum after winning the last two games, but the Indians have their ace on the mound in Game 7, Corey Kluber. He's been fantastic in this World Series so far. He's already won two games. They might think history is on their side. It's kind of ironic that the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA championship back in June after being down 3-1 to the Golden State Warriors. Now, the fans here in Cleveland are on the other end of that.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, I am your host, Al Martin. And just to kind of let this ride out for a little bit, Isaac, you know, I texted her yesterday, well, this morning, excuse me, letting her know I was going to start the show like this, but this track right here is actually from my sister. That's right, Dominique Martin, little Neek, man, she's grown up, and she's, you know, now producing her own music and making her own music, and she just released this track last night, Isaac, and I heard it, and I'm like, you know what, it'll be really cool if I roll that in with our montage like we do each and every day to start the show. So I'm always about, you know, supporting her dream. She's doing a great job. You got to go after what you want in life, and she is certainly attacking that right now with her music career. So that is called Gibberish, Isaac. You like that track?
I like the name. Yeah, I love the track as well. I said to you actually over the loudspeakers while I was playing, boy, you've gone all soft on us all of a sudden listening to all this love music and stuff like that. But I really enjoyed it. And anybody who knows me knows that that's not necessarily an insult. In fact, that's a compliment. I do listen to Taylor Swift on the regular, by the way.
I was just about to call you out, brother, because you are a Taylor Swift fanatic. And I still, for the life of me, do not understand that, okay? But yeah, my sister, her music is kind of like mixed between like R&B, pop, you know, she dances as well. So, and she actually has an event coming up where she's going to be performing live this song. So she's tearing it up. She's in Detroit. She's doing great. She's in school. You know, definitely wish her the best, man. I'm always chatting with her about going after what she wants in life. And she is taking life, you know, by the horns right now. So, all right, mixed in with Gibberish was, of course, the World Series Game 6. That's right. The Fall Classic, folks, will now head to what I like to call the two greatest words in all of sports. Game 7. It don't get no better than this, folks. I don't care what sport you're talking about. Anytime you talk about a deciding game in sports, you're going to tune in. You're going to watch. You're going to be interested. You're going to be intrigued. And this series, before it even began, was already intriguing because you talk about the two most deprived franchises in baseball history. The Chicago Cubs have not won a World Series. We know the storyline since, you know, 1908. That's 108 years, folks. The Cleveland Indians, 68 years. Quite some time for them as well. Maybe not as long, but still, that's a long time. A long drought. And now, these two deprived franchises will meet in Cleveland for a deciding game. This is how you want any pro sports season to end. Like this. With everything on the line, both teams knowing that they have to put out their best. I mean, I can only imagine what goes through an athlete's mind the morning of a game seven. You have to be jittery. You have to be a bit nervous. You have to be a bit anxious, excited. I mean, all of those emotions culminating because this is your year, you know, and you don't want to be on the short end of that stick, especially these respective fan bases. I mean, my goodness, a great ride this entire MLB year for both of these teams, but somebody has got to lose. Now, just a few tidbits here. I want to throw out a few areas of food for thought, if you will. Now, this is just the 38th Game 7 in World Series history. And you know, you heard in that montage, you heard a reporter from CNN as he was breaking down this Game 7. How ironic is it that back in June, you had the Cleveland Cavaliers breaking their city's 52-year championship drought by, of course, overcoming a 3-1 deficit against the Golden State Warriors, a team that had broken the regular season record for any NBA franchise. Of course, that famed 1996 Chicago Bulls record, right? That was broken by the Warriors, and they can't get the job done in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. But a 52-year championship drought was broken by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And now, in less than 5 months, this could be the city's second title. Oh, boy, it's got to be good to be a Cleveland sports fan right now, with the exception of the Cleveland Browns, all right? But still, not too many cities get an opportunity like this. You win an NBA championship, and in less than 5 months, I should say, you have an opportunity now to win a World Series championship. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, Chicago is not only trying to win its first championship since 1908 and the third in franchise history. Get this. It is also trying to become just the sixth team to win a best-of-seven World Series by overcoming a 3-1 deficit. Pretty impressive stuff, folks. And you know, as opposed to what the Cleveland Cavaliers were able to do, I mean, Cleveland, the Cavs came back from a 3-1 deficit. The Indians actually had a 3-1 stranglehold on the Cubs in this series. So, quite contrast there, right? And, you know, you look at, you know, teams who have, you know, overcome, you know, and won a best-of-seven World Series after being down 3-1. There hasn't been many. Again, you know, Chicago's trying to become the sixth to do so. You had the 1925 Pirates over the Senators, the 1958 New York Yankees over the Braves. Don't forget about this one, folks. The 68 Tigers over the Cardinals, the 79 Pirates. So you have two Pirates teams in this mix. The 79 Pirates over the Orioles and the 85 Royals over the Cardinals. So the Cardinals have come out on the short end of that stick twice out of the five times thus far. The Cubs also looking to become the seventh team to win a World Series by taking the final two games on the road, in addition to the 1958 Yankees, the 68 Tigers, and 79 Pirates. Three other teams did it: the 26 Cards over the Yankees, the 34 Cards over the Tigers, and the 52 Yankees over the Dodgers. The Indians, meanwhile, are going for their first championship since 1948. They'd like to join the 67 Cards over the Red Sox and the 72 A's over the Reds as teams that fritter away 3-1 leads but still won Game 7. They will be the first team to follow such a script by taking the finale on their home turf. And when it comes to home turf, we all know just how important home field or home court advantage is in the world of sports, let alone a Game 7, right? When it comes to Game 7s In the Fall Classic, home teams have won 55.6% of the time. So when you look at that stat alone, Cleveland would be favored tonight. Now, before the World Series began, I had given my prediction, and I had actually called the Chicago Cubs to win this thing in six. Well, I'm wrong. I'm wrong right now because, hey, that didn't happen. This thing is going to a game seven now. I've been wrong for a while now. So I'm already wrong. So how about I modify my prediction now? Because when I look at the stats and when I look at starting pitchers for this game seven, in my opinion, all signs point to a Cleveland Indians win now. I have to say that, folks. I mean, let's just look at it for a second. You have Corey Kluber, who now goes on the mound for the Indians tonight. He's a stud. Kluber has actually already won two games in this series thus far. Kluber's postseason, get this, he has struck out 35 batters while allowing just three runs in 30 and one-third innings of work over five starts. That is absolutely fantastic. Get this. His .89 ERA is the eighth lowest mark among pitchers with at least 25 postseason innings dating back to the inception of the World Series in 1903. That's an eye-popping stat, folks. Eye-popping stat. Nobody throughout this entire postseason has had an answer for Corey Kluber. He also ranks third in the 48 years of the division play area when it comes to the lowest ERA mark among pitchers with at least 25 postseason innings. And then, you know, you have to take this into consideration. So you have a stud in Corey Kluber taking the mound for Cleveland. Then you look at how Game 6 went. The bullpen for the Indians, three names that didn't even warm up last night. Three names that are an essential component to this team's success. And Andrew Miller, Cody Allen, and Brian Shaw. They chilled. They kicked it last night. Didn't have to do anything last night. They are well rested for this game seven, folks. And get this, Kluber, Miller, and Allen have combined for 59 of the team's 124 postseason innings. That's 47.5% if you're doing the math, all right? So you have a healthy Miller, Allen, and Shaw revved up, well-rested, coming out the bullpen in case they need to save Kluber. I always say, if Kluber just gets them to five or six, the Indians will be in good shape. They will, folks. And, you know, this was quite interesting as well because, you know, I sat back and watched that game last night, and clearly the Cubs had it in hand. You know, they end up scoring 9 runs total. They win the game 9-3. But when it was a 7-2 lead, I didn't understand why Joe Maddon decided to bring out Ardrolas Chapman. Yeah, Chapman pitched again for the Cubs in the 7th inning. Why? I didn't really get that, folks. He did the same in Game 5 to throw out Chapman to get the Cubs the final outs with a 1-run lead. And between Games 5 and 6, right now Chapman has thrown a combined 62 pitches. A day off in between, which helps, but still, a combined 62 pitches between two games. He was pulled after 20 pitches last night in favor of Pedro Strop, and he pitched a clean 8th before Anthony Rizzo extended the lead to 9-2. And it's quite funny because immediately when that move was made, I was puzzled, just like many people were. And I even think the Cubs' Twitter account was even puzzled. Because get this, the Cubs' Twitter account during that moment, when I'm pretty sure they were getting a lot of ats and a lot of criticism as to why Joe Maddon decided to throw out Chapman. And the Cubs Twitter account read this when that moment happened. Quote, "We still don't make managerial decisions, but thank you all for the advice," end quote. That was a tweet sent out by the official Cubs Twitter account when Ardrolas Chapman pitched again. So, I get it, though. I will say this. To play devil's advocate when it comes to this moment, I get it. Folks, it is the World Series. Granted, you have a hefty 7-2 lead at that point in the seventh, but we've seen crazier things happen, right? Why not throw out one of your prime names in Chapman to make sure you seal the deal? And, you know, we get so caught up. We live in a culture now when discussing baseball where pitch counts are at the forefront of the conversation when discussing pitchers, right? Because you don't want to wear out a pitcher as the series goes on. But if Chapman is there and you want to solidify and make sure that you're going to get a win, Madden felt like, hey, why don't I throw him out? Throw him 20 pitches. He's fine. I think Chapman's going to be fine here. But I must say, it did raise an eyebrow for me. I will say that. So, when you look at Kyle Hendricks, for the Cubbies, after winning the NL ERA title during the regular season, he had a 2.13 ERA. He has pitched to a 1.31 ERA with 17 Ks in 20 2/3 innings over 4 postseason starts. Despite having yet to allow a run, though, Hendricks lasted just a little over 4 innings in Game 3, if you remember that game, because he had yielded 6 hits, 2 walks, left the bases loaded for reliever Justin Grimm, who did escape by the skin of his teeth. He escaped that jam by inducing a ground ball double play from Francisco Lindor. When you compare the pitching matchup tonight, and when you evaluate the health of each bullpen, all signs point to the Cleveland Indians winning. That's what I always look at. You know what I mean? As you heard in that snippet, the old adage in baseball, you're only as good as your next starting pitcher. Well, right now, the Cleveland Indians have that advantage with Corey Kluber. I know a lot of Chicago Cubs fans don't want to hear that. They've come back from a 3-1 deficit, for goodness sake. How in the world is the momentum not on their side? Well, just look at the starting pitchers and make the comparison there, okay? That is why I am choosing the Cleveland Indians to win this game. And I feel like the entire world has slowly but surely become Chicago Cubs fans, because when you look at 108, I mean, that's a long time. And I grant it, 68 is a long time as well. 1948, that's a long time for the Indians. But 108, we're talking about triple digits, man. That's a long time suffering fan base. And, we've brought on our current sports intern, David Greenberg, who is from Illinois, and he's voiced his displeasure, when it comes to being a Cubs fan, because they constantly let you down, and now you sit at a game 7. You stare at a game 7. I'm predicting the Indians to win this game, but, anything can happen. Anything can happen in a game 7, folks. It is so unpredictable. Emotions will be high. I want to know what you think. Who pulls out tonight's game 7 of the World Series? Please call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, where we are streaming, of course, the show live. And you can also even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Before we hit our first break, I want to get the thoughts and opinions of course, our engineer Isaac Cassis. Isaac, oh boy, you got to love this, right? I'm conflicted because, you have to be there in the entire game because you're actually covering tonight's Michigan State men's basketball game against Saginaw Valley. Yes, starts sir. At 7. Now, the game does start at 8, so you should be able to catch most of the game. We all know baseball games last a long time. So
4 hours at least for this one, yeah.
Right, so you should be able to go home and catch much of the baseball game. I'm going to cover the second half of that game tonight. And, I want to be there right when that game starts for the World Series. It's going to be a fun one. You've heard my thoughts and opinions. You actually chose the Indians to win this series, if I remember correctly, before the series started. I don't know how many games you said, but this is going to be a fun matchup. But in my opinion, I chose the Cubs in 6. That I'm wrong already because the thing is going to 7 now. when you evaluate the pitching matchup, it's hard not to think that Cleveland does not have the advantage tonight.
Yeah, welcome to the bright side, Al. I'm sticking with Cleveland for Game 7, and I originally called the series to go 6, so last night I certainly was torn. But, you know, first off, this is a win-win situation for fans of baseball. If you ask Cleveland, who would you like to lose to? They'd say, oh, well, if we're going to lose, it's going to be to the Cubs. If you ask Cubs fans, as I have, who would you want to lose to? They're like, well, if we had to lose to anybody in another World Series, it would be the Indians. This has been a more than fitting matchup and battle between these two sports franchises who have time and time again been trotted on and absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of talent in other pools. But you know what? The Cubs streak, I think, is going to go 1 year longer. And that's because of the exact points that you made about the pitching rotation for Cleveland. Corey Kluber has a slight edge on Kyle Hendricks. And by slight, I mean in terms of letting in one less run, pretty much, in an all-deciding game. The thing is, though, it's not the starting pitching for me that's going to decide this game necessarily. It's going to be the bullpen. The Cleveland Indians have allowed 32 runs in 14 games this postseason. That's a remarkable rate. That's just over 2 runs a game. The thing is, though, they've done it with 2 of the most utilized pitchers on that squad allowing 8 and 9 runs respectively. Mm-hmm. And of course, for the Indians, I am talking about Josh Tomlin and Trevor Bauer. The thing is, it's going to be Corey Kluber, it's going to be Andrew Miller, and it's going to be the bullpen, including Brian Shaw and Mike Clevenger, who has done so well this postseason, that is going to tag team this Cubs offense at home, Game 7. I like the Indians not by much. I think this is a very low-scoring game, but I do think Cleveland pulls it out, does not relinquish the 3-1 lead, although how funny would that be? And I think Cleveland wins this 2-1. I think it's that low scoring.
2-1. I'm going with Cleveland 5-3.
Okay.
I'm going 5-3 Indians.
So both bats keep going. Yeah.
I think late in the game, though. I think there's going to be a pitching duel to start. And I think as the game goes on, no. I think we'll see some runs get put on the board. So I want to know what you think, though, our listeners out there, and it's going to be very cool throughout, up until the end of the basketball season for MSU men and women, because we're actually going to be doing ticket giveaways starting tomorrow, Isaac. So starting this week, we're going to be giving away tickets to the MSU men's, women's, and home hockey games for MSU hockey, folks. So I want you to call in. And let's do it this way, Isaac. If we have a caller that calls in and gives us a prediction that is dead on, spot on the money, they'll win some tickets.
Okay.
You know, I know Michigan Tech plays Michigan State. That Michigan State hosts Michigan Tech this weekend. Possibly some hockey tickets. Maybe some MSU. You know, we'll let them even choose. How about that? For the upcoming 2 weeks, it has to be in that span though. So call in. I want to get your thoughts and predictions. 517-355. WKAR 517-355-9527. Who wins the World Series and give us a score? All right. In the meantime, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with Vince Ellis, who is the Detroit Pistons beat reporter for the Free Press. Vince will talk about the 3-1 start. Back-to-back seasons now, the Pistons have begun the year 3-1. He'll talk about that start and so much more concerning the red, white, and royal blue. We'll be right back. They call me Burn Boy. I see you, baby. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. As you guys know, I popped out the womb, Isaac, with probably an Isaiah Thomas jersey on. You know, I love the Pistons. That's my favorite sports franchise out there. And I have to go, of course, with my Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, love the Pistons. So I'm excited every single, time of the year, around this time of the year, when the Pistons begin the year. And they began now the season 3-1 with the latest win coming against the New York Knicks at home at the Palace last night. I'm so excited for this team. I see a lot of pieces there. I think they They even move up from where they were as the eighth seed in last year's Eastern Conference as the playoffs began. I think they can even be a fourth or fifth seed here. But I want to know this, Isaac, really briefly, before we bring on Vince Ellis, what in the world is going on with your New Orleans Pelicans?
Wait. We're on a good note here. Can't we just keep it optimistic for once?
Dude, I watched the highlights last night, and I believe they played the Milwaukee Bucks,
a
team that the Pistons beat this past weekend on Sunday, actually.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yep.
And, you know, I see Anthony Davis go off. His numbers have been
35 and 15.
Yeah, 35 points last night. He's been going off this year so far. But, man, they can't get a dub right now.
Well, and I'll bring it up that we do have injury problems currently. Of course, the New Orleans Pelicans is my analog of your Detroit Pistons. But Drew Holiday is hurt. So is Tyreek Evans. Yeah. So is Quincy Pondexter.
And they played the Warriors and the Spurs in the stretch of basketball
starters,
as well.
But we should be beating the Bucks, and we should be beating the Denver Nuggets. So, you know what? I don't even want to comment on it. Davis is locked until 2020. There's a little bit of time that we have to reshape this franchise. I'm not crazy about Alvin Gentry as a coach.
Okay.
I'll keep it positive, though. Your Pistons have been amazing. And how about Ish Smith? I told you, he's been playing a little bit better recently after that first game where he kind of stuttered out of the gates. And the Detroit Pistons, they really look good without Reggie Jackson.
Exactly. We're going to dive into this with Vince as well. And I think Ish Smith is a very good backup point guard. I will say that. Let's invite him to the show right now. Vince Ellis, we've had him on numerous times prior to. Detroit Pistons beat reporter, one of the best in the biz, folks, for the Detroit Free Press. Vince, what's up, my man?
What's up, Al? How you doing? And before I start, I want to correct your sidekick there. You said Drew Holiday is hurt. Actually, he's out with his wife.
Well, that's true. That's true.
He had pregnancy and the brain thing and stuff, so he just took it's more like a personal leave of absence. He's not hurt.
Yeah, that's true.
His wife had a health issue,
and the
franchise gracefully let him have a leave of absence to go take care of his wife.
Oh, wow.
I don't have all the details right here in front of me, but he's not hurt, though.
Yeah, well, I'm really hoping that his wife gets well. I didn't know that news.
Yeah, what happened is Lauren Holiday, his wife, who's also on the USA women's basketball team, she had a tumor in her brain that fortunately innocuous. Mm-hmm. They were able to remove it, but she had to give birth and then have this tumor treated afterwards. So Drew Holiday has been taking care of his family since. He's expected to be back as soon as early November, but yes, he's on a leave of absence from the team.
Boy, you hate hearing news like that. Okay, well, on a lighter note, Vince, I've been waiting on this news to come across my desk for quite some time, and I want to pick your brain about it, and I want to know how close we are to this news possibly becoming a reality. The move for the Pistons to downtown Detroit, how close is this thing to being settled?
You know, it's pretty close. I mean, I'm not breaking any news there. What Tom Gore said at the season opener, I guess it would have been Friday night. Yeah, Friday night, and it's now today is Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 days ago, Tom Gore said, yeah, we're close. So not breaking any news there. So to echo what Tom Gore said 5 days ago, yeah, they're close. You're close to that day.
Now, what has to be ironed out before the Pistons can move? Now, are they going to be moving into the same arena, Little Caesars Arena, as the Detroit Red Wings? And are there modifications that have to be made now, seeing as though they have to accommodate an NBA team as well?
Yeah, exactly. There's NBA requirements that have to be done, locker rooms, training rooms, a whole lot of different things. It's a lot more complex than just that. But obviously, to make those type of changes, it's easier to do those changes while a building is going up than to come back and do them after a building has been constructed. So now is the time. That's why they're trying to get this deal done.
And this,
I don't think an announcement is intimate this week. I've been told an announcement is intimate this week, or probably even next week. But sometime mid November, you can probably expect an announcement.
And this will take place.
Much, they said they're close, so.
And this will take place next season for the Pistons, Vince?
Yes, that's the goal, is to move in next season.
Wow, how about that? So my other question here is, because they pumped a lot of money into the Palace of Auburn Hills, what is going to happen with the Palace?
Well, as reported, looks like the Palace will more than likely face a wrecking ball. You know, it's an older arena. Still a good fan experience, but as the years go on, the upkeep costs go on to keep up an old arena. There were some efforts made to get Oakland County to buy the arena back and maybe do a lease, or maybe they share in the upkeep. I wrote about this stuff, and I'm not going to bore your listeners with those type of details. But I guess the Pistons decided, you know, I guess Oakland County balked at whatever things the Pistons reached out to them. So I guess they turned their attention to the new arena going up in downtown Detroit.
Vince, in your opinion, is this the right move? Is this long overdue?
I don't have that kind of opinion. I don't care either way. They could play on the moon for all I care. So, you know, we've had this debate on the show before. What do you think? I don't care. It doesn't affect me really, except my commute. I live in downtown Detroit, so I guess it wouldn't affect the commute. But as long as the free press will figure out a way to pay me to get me to the moon if they're playing games there, I would get there. So it's just a place. It's just a place, a job. I don't have an opinion one way or the other.
Okay, I like that. You're keeping it real, Vince. I love that. All right, let's dive into the X's and O's of this team now. With the win over the Knicks, as I mentioned, the Pistons have begun the year 3-1 for back-to-back seasons, doing it without the help of Reggie Jackson. Are you surprised at the start for this team so far?
Not really, because, I mean, they really haven't beat anybody all that good. I mean, they beat the Bucks, they beat Orlando. You know, the Knicks have some names. You know, can they get it together and have a good team before the year's out? The Knicks, maybe. But, you know, I have questions about how those pieces fit. You know, pretty much Kristaps Porzingis, every time he got it last night, he shot it. You got Carmelo, who's kind of a ball stopper, even though he's trying to be more facilitated. And you got Derrick Rose, who's really not known as a facilitator. So, you know, so I'm not really surprised that they're 3-1. I want to see how they do in a road game, even though they're playing another bad team tonight, the Brooklyn Nets. But, you know, the road can be tricky in the NBA. But, you know, we have a better idea of how they're doing, you know, starting tonight, 7 of their next 9 games on the road, and they got to go out west next week with games against the Clippers and the Spurs. So really not that surprised that these are games they had to win to salvage or to ride the storm while Reggie's out. These are 3 games they had to win. They took care of business, 3 double-digit victories, won them all pretty comfortably at the end, even though the Knicks game really went down to the end. The score probably wasn't indicative of how tight the game was, but, you know, they took care of business. That's pretty much all you can say about the start so far.
Yeah, like I said, I said the same thing. I mean, let's temper the emotions, you know, a bit here. And, you know, look at this, the scoring combination, though, of Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris. That has certainly stood out to me. I mean, they combined for almost 50 points last night. What is it about the current offense that has allowed those two to flourish?
Well, we spoke to it. Reggie Jackson's not there, so Reggie Jackson, one of the best pick-and-roll players in a league that's very pick-and-roll heavy. And you got Andre Drummond, who's one of the best role men in the league. Stan is going to run that a lot, you know. But now Reggie's not there. He had to diversify a little bit. You know, he still runs his share. Ish Smith gets his share of pick and rolls and stuff. But he wanted to diversify the offense anyway coming into the year because it was probably a little bit too Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, pick and roll dominant last year. But obviously with Tobias, you have two pretty interchangeable forwards. Both multi-talented forwards, both can shoot the ball, both can put the ball on the floor, both are willing passers. So basically, they pretty much attack whoever has the weaker matchup. So, you know, Tobias scored 25 points last night. He was matched up against Kristaps Porzingis. So Tobias attacked him and got 25 points. But I wrote about it for the season that you could expect more from them. And so far, that's one thing I predicted would happen, and so far I've been accurate.
Yeah, and you look at what really intrigued me as well was that matchup between Carmelo Anthony and Marcus Morris. I mean, Morris went right at Melo, you know. And you look at a matchup like that, Melo is a guy who's one of the best scorers in the NBA. And you can approach that matchup two ways, you know, with the mindset of, okay, I need to figure out how to slow down this juggernaut. And you can kind of forget about your own offensive game. But I felt like Morris was able to find a balance with that last night. Would you agree?
No doubt. You know, and Carmelo's going to get hits. And really, Carmelo's one of those guys. He's such a great offensive player. No one really stops him. You just try to stop him from getting easy baskets and make him shoot over you, basically. And he hits a lot of those shots, so you just kind of tip your hat to him and just run back down the floor on offense. But Morris made him work at the defensive end. Played with himself, very efficient. You know, 22 points on 9-for-14 shooting. Morris is one of those guys. He doesn't back down from anybody. I think he's one of the toughest guys on the team as far as like when it comes to mentally and a physical presence. And he has a kind of a little swagger to him. I think that really helps the team too. As the guy told me, he's a bad, you know what. So
right.
When he first got him, first part of the last year, someone texted me with the team and said he's a bad, you know what. So, and you know what, he's proven to be that. He's a bad, you know what.
That is very true. And Vince, KCP, who I think is the best defender on the team, and, you know, he can also score the basketball as well. And we saw him particularly from deep. I mean, he was 4 of 6 from the three-point arc. What's the ceiling for KCP?
Well, that's one of those things I've always kind of gone back and forth on, you know. Could he be like a poor man's DeMar DeRozan? I don't know. I don't think he has that in him.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I guess I'll defer. We'll figure that out when he hits that ceiling.
Right. And I want to know, because there's a few new names to this team. I mentioned Ishmith, Beno Udrich. Also, I mean, you know, Lauer as well. I mean, there's Boban Marjanovic. There's a lot of new names on this team that I haven't really seen much of, and I'm curious to see how they get implemented coming off the bench more so than as starters. Who are a few sleepers that you think are really going to turn some heads this year?
Well, that was the whole goal. You know, last year the Pistons had one of the better starting fives in the league, but their bench was not very good. Matter of fact, you could like point to like at least 4 or 5 games where a bad bench play cost them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at that, you know, they're a 50-win team if they just have an average bench last year. And so with the addition of Ishmith and John Lura specifically,
mm-hmm.
those two guys were added to strengthen their bench. Now, what's happened is it's at the start now because of Reggie's injury, but because they got a guy who they thought was a confident backup, they're able to throw a guy out there in the starting lineup. And, you know, and obviously, you know, he's not Reggie Jackson, but that being said, they haven't lost a lot. They've been able to keep it in the road so far.
Now, you know, this is a Pistons team that I think has a lot of upside. And they finished 8th in the East last year. Of course, they went out in the sweep to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Not an easy sweep, though. For, you know, the Cavs really had to, you know, put their nose to the grindstone and get out of that series. I believe that they can move up to maybe, you know, 4 or 5. Where could you see this Pistons team finishing in the East?
I can't argue with you. I mean, that's reasonable. You know, that's probably will be a goal. I think the team wants to host a playoff series. That's their goal. So, but yeah, that's reasonable. That's not a crazy thought to think they could do that better with them. But we'll see how it all plays out.
Vince Ellis, if you're just now joining us here on WKER's Current Sports, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Free. Vince, before we get you out of here, the Pistons, as you mentioned, sure. They play the Nets tonight. The Nets are 1-3 on the year. The Pistons, do they make it 4-1? If so, why?
It should be 4-1. And you know what? I just don't do a whole lot of deep analysis on basketball games. There's 82 of these things. This is not like a football game with
right.
only 1 a week.
Right,
the
exactly.
The reason why? Because they're better than the Nets. That's simple.
Right. I like that. And also Ray McCollum. I saw in the news that Ray McCollum will be playing, of course, to the D-League affiliate of the Pistons for the Grand Rapids
yes.
Drive.
Good for Ray.
What's that?
Good for Ray.
Yeah,
Stan, actually,
right?
He didn't like to tell guys that he cuts what to do, but he kind of suggested to them that since, you know our system, you know what we do, it'll be a good place for you to go over there, and that can thrive. And, you know, when those guys play in the D-League, you know, any team could call them up at any moment, you know. They're not necessarily the Pistons' property, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like baseball. So in a place where he can, you know, play well, maybe he can get the attention of another team and maybe get a 10-day or something, you know, when they start doing that stuff.
And, you know, Ray had an interesting quote, Vince. But before this news came out, you know, Ray talked about how he didn't want to, you know, hear for a third time you've been cut, you know? And then he's cut from the Pistons. Did you get a chance to talk with Ray at all, you know, after being cut from the Pistons? And even if not, you know, what do you think is going through his head right now?
I have not, and I would not really even – I don't guess – I don't play the game of guessing what's going through someone's head. That's kind of a dangerous game to play in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
Al, I'm an old-school journalist.
I hear you, man.
I have this debate.
Right.
How can I know what he's thinking?
I totally hear you. But, you know, when you just take into consideration what – you know, just the road he's had in the NBA thus far, and you get told for a third time that you're cut from the team, and you're thinking – you're going to make the roster and something like that happens, that's got to be pretty jarring for anybody. Just
I mean,
human
would be
emotion.
Disappointed, but I would let Ray say that. I wouldn't say that for him.
Of course. Of course. But, again, it's sports talk, so we're going back and forth, just kind of just shooting
just
the breeze.
Shoot. Yeah.
Yeah.
What now? I'm sorry, I missed that. While I was talking to you, I'm sorry.
Again, Vince, we're here on Sports Talk Radio. So when you evaluate a situation like this, just from your standpoint, if you're in the NBA and you get cut twice and you think you're going to make the NBA roster and just days before the start of the NBA season you hear that you cut again, I mean, that's got to do something emotionally to any human.
I would be disappointed, but as I said, I would not speak for Ray.
Of course. I know you're not speaking for Ray. You're speaking from Vince Ellis' standpoint.
Yes,
I get
it. If it was me, yes. I mean, it's like you're being fired or something. Yes, so I guess there would be a disappointment there. But for me. But that's not Ray saying that. Your question was,
right?
What's
okay,
going
right.
to Ray's mind?
Okay, I ask you this then, Vince. Does Ray McCollum, will we see him on an NBA roster this season?
I have no idea I don't have a crystal ball. You want you grand? I am a, I keep telling you, I am not some columnist with grand proclamation.
So,
there are people you can call up for that stuff, but I'm just not that guy. So.
Vince, thank you so much. But nonetheless, you gave us some great insight. The one, the only, Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Vince, my man, thanks so much.
Take care.
You got it. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's edition of Current Sports by giving you a bit of a preview of tonight's MSU men's basketball game versus Saginaw Valley. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You know, Isaac and I were just joking around with Vince. I love him. Vince Ellis, one of the best in the biz, does a fantastic job with the Detroit Free Press covering the Detroit Pistons. And, you know, Vince, he killed me during that interview there because I would throw out a question. He would say, Al, I'm only giving you what I'm reporting. I'm only giving you facts, which I get. I totally get it. It's an old school journalist mentality. But at the same time, what do you expect? It's sports talk radio, right? So I see both sides of the coin here. So I want to pose this to you. How about
the
that,
second
right?
choice.
Yeah,
because yes.
I just want to dive into this insight because, you know, it's interesting when looking at Ray McCollum's journey in the NBA. He had a great career at U of D, goes to the league. It doesn't really pan out as far as minutes goes, and it's all circumstantial as well when it comes to NBA teams. I mean, you know, some rosters are more hefty than others, and there's more opportunity on other teams for you to get your feet wet in the NBA game. When it comes to this Pistons team, though, I thought that there was room for McCollum to possibly be integrated in the offensive system specifically, and then the man gets cut days before the NBA year begins. He signed with the Grand Rapids Drive. I'm wishing him all the best. When it comes to Ray McCollum here, Isaac, I mean, do you think we'll see him eventually down the pike, possibly get a chance with the Pistons? You know, barring, you know, I don't want to go the injury route, of course, but do you think his game can somehow matriculate to possibly Stan Van saying, hey, let's give this kid a shot?
Unfortunately, I don't see it with the Pistons. I know he went to the Drive to stay close to the team. The thing is, I loved Ray when he was in Sacramento. I thought that was a very good fit, and unfortunately, they just replaced him down the road with Darren Collison and Rajon Rondo. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was a very good fit on this Pistons team. I think Ish Smith gets the call up over Ray McCollum, and that the Pistons have a backup point guard now who's temporarily a starter, who's accustomed to playing starter minutes, who can do a full 20 a game and not get worn out, whatever, who can hold down the spot. Can't really, can McCollum. I don't see anything McCollum gives the Pistons that Ish Smith doesn't give them better. So, unfortunately, I don't see it with the Pistons, but this guy's going to get another chance in the NBA. I'd be shocked if he did.
I got to make this point, Isaac, because it crossed my mind when I was watching that game last night. I watched it wall to wall. I watch every Pistons game wall to wall. Stanley Johnson is struggling to start the year. He really is. Stanley Johnson, he was 0-4 from the field. He had 1 point. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but the Stanimal isn't anything like he was last year. I will
like
say that.
I like that nickname, too. And I got to ask you, actually, as a Detroit native, but also a diehard Pistons fan, you grew up watching games in the Palace. Mm-hmm. Are you sad to see them leave, or do you like the move downtown?
I've been waiting on this since I was little. I mean, having to make that drive to Ann Arbor, I mean, that's about 40, 45 minutes away, right? Is that actually Lansing is closer to the Palace of Auburn Hills than Detroit is.
Really?
You could get there quicker from Lansing than if you were to live in the city of Detroit. So it would be kind of, you know, you would have to kind of plan for that. I mean, if it was an 8 p.m. start time, I mean, we would have to leave at least by 7:30. You know what I mean? If I wanted to get there and see the players warm up and that kind of thing. So I think this is long overdue. I think it will breathe more life into downtown, having, you know, the Red Wings in this new venue as well as the Detroit Pistons. I mean, you're going to see Pistons fans more in that atmosphere. I this move, in my opinion, has been long overdue, and I think they have been hesitant to make this move, as you know, to the point I just made. They put so much money into the Palace of Auburn Hills, so much, and it's a great venue, one of the best venues, I think, in pro basketball. But, hey, If you want to grow your audience, if you want to grow that fan base, what better way to do it than to put the Detroit Pistons in Detroit?
Couldn't agree anymore with you. The Palace is the nicest NBA arena I've ever been to. But at the same time, I love having all the teams downtown. If they're representing the city, let them be in the city. That's simple.
Totally agree with you. All right. Well, we have 3 minutes left here in the show, and we'll dive more into this on tomorrow's show. And again, these rankings mean absolutely nothing when you really dive into it at the end of the day. And I thought crossed my mind. You know, when I saw Texas A&M in the top four, I said, you know what? The College Football Playoff Committee knows what it's doing. They're just trying to spark some controversy here so that college football can be on the tongues of fans out there even more so, because we decided to throw Texas A&M in this mix knowing full good and well that Washington should have been amongst that four. They knew what they were doing. This is my conspiracy theory when it comes to the College Football Playoff Committee. They were just trying to spark up some controversy to get fans talking.
You are exactly right. I didn't even think of that when I first saw it. All I thought is these idiots. I was outraged. I was infuriated.
You fed into it.
And that's the thing. I fed into it. You're exactly right. This is about ratings. It's a ploy. It's getting ESPN a couple more clicks on that article. Of course Washington is a top four team in the nation at this point. Texas A&M already lost, and not even in convincing fashion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So we'll dive more into that on tomorrow's show. The MSU men's basketball team will play Saginaw Valley tonight. Tip time is at 7 p.m. Josh Langford, he won't be playing again tonight. I saw that news earlier this week. Josh Langford is still, he's not 100%. I believe he's dealing with that hamstring injury. Yep. So I'm really hoping to see him out in the court soon as the year proceeds and we really start to get into the nooks and crannies of this MSU men's basketball schedule and the regular season begins. We won't see him tonight. Miles Bridges, though, must see TV yet again. I predicted three highlight dunks. I didn't even get to see that game, actually, but I believe he had three highlight dunks in that game, the first game. What do you think Miles does tonight, Isaac?
You know, I think he follows it up. This guy is just so talented, and I feel like I've seen him enough now that I can say it's authentic. All of his performances are for real. I'm not saying 33 on 12 and 14 shooting again, but it's going to be impressive.
I think I'm going to throw out just to throw out something here. I think that Tum Tum has a good game today. I really do. He took nine shots, and Tommy Izzo said, I don't know about nine shots, but in that first exhibition. But I think Tum Tum has a solid overall productive game tonight. All right, folks, we are out of time. Thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We'll be back at it on tomorrow's show, and much thanks to Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press. Be easy, people.